Hello, I'm Eamon Ryan and you're listening to Open Field, a new podcast bringing into focus a range of issues close to my own heart. What's happening to our planet? How do we make our cities flourish? Where do we generate our energy? What kind of society do we want to build? To tease out these questions and many more, I'm speaking to a range of individuals, from environmental campaigners, scientists, technologists, right through to musicians, athletes and artists that I meet in my everyday work. It is an open field, and I would love to receive your thoughts about this podcast. You can email me at eamon.ryan@oireachtas.ie and find me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram and LinkedIn. At the end of August, Pope Francis will visit Ireland as part of the Catholic Church's event, the World Meeting of Families. I've been inspired by his encyclical Laudato Si on care for our common home. I like the way he brings social and ecological justice together. For this first edition of Open Field, I speak to Jane Mellett, a pastoral worker in Cherry Orchard and Ballyfermot in Dublin. She's been appointed project coordinator of Our Common Home, an initiative focused on greening the World Meeting of Families. We talk about life as a pastoral worker in Dublin, the role of the church in addressing climate change, what the Pope's visit means for the non-religious, greening the practice of pilgrimage, and Mellett's work with victims of child labour in India. Jane, how did you get involved in that? How did you become a pastoral worker? What do you do?
So basically, I suppose all my studies at university level were around theology. I had a huge interest from a young age. And I just always had a feeling that I wanted to work at community level within church. I was teaching for some time in the UK, teaching religious studies. And it's an area of huge interest in. But I was always drawn back to, I suppose, the community element of church. And when the Archdiocese of Dublin started to recruit pastoral workers a few years ago, I jumped at the opportunity and was delighted to become part of that initiative. And I was appointed to Ballyfermot and Cherry Orchard, where I've worked for the last 7 years. I've just finished my appointment there. So it's been a really interesting journey.
Yeah. What do you do?
What do I do? This is the famous question. What does the parish pastoral worker do? So I suppose if you think of a parish community and all the different elements of what happens there, the pastoral worker is part of the parish team. So they will work with the priests of that parish. And sometimes if there's a parish sister there, they might be on that team as well. And basically they're involved in the day-to-day maintenance of a parish and working closely with parish councils. I suppose trying to empower the leaders of the future is a huge element of the work, but also you're involved with all the sacramental preparation, youth ministry, reaching out and linking in with the other community groups and services. So it's a very varied job, and no day is the same. And it's one where I suppose you're linking in with people's lives in the joyful times and in the tough times, and journeying with people. So a lot of the work can be unseen at times because you're spending time with people and listening to their stories and maybe just trying to encourage them on their own spiritual journeys as well. So yeah, it's interesting.
I realised we were chatting earlier and that we've mutual friend Jerry O'Connor with the Redemptorists who's there as well. And they've been involved in that parish for a long time, have they?
The Redemptorists are in Cherry Orchard now, maybe 14 or 15 years. They have a really great commitment to that area, and they've been in Assumption Parish in Ballyfermot for the last 7 years. So they're a fantastic congregation to work with.
What makes them good?
What makes them good? I suppose they're just very open to teamwork. They're forward thinking. They have, you know, great ideas. The people that I worked with in Cherry Orchard and and Ballyfermot just had, you know, good vision. And we're always, you know, parish life at the moment isn't an easy place at times. There's a lot of struggles, and I suppose they just continue to have new ideas about reaching out, because, you know, they're a missionary group, and we often think of mission as being in the African continent or somewhere like that, but they very much are about getting out onto the streets and parish and meeting people where they're at. And
Cherry Orchard is, it would have a reputation of being a tough enough area, you know, kind of wouldn't be the richest part of Dublin. Or,
certainly not,
I mean, there must be a lot of, do you see a lot of the problems with violence or with drugs or with, is that, I mean, I don't want to classify or kind of the victim area in a way that, you know, makes that worse, but you would, do you see that in some of the work you do?
Yeah, you do, of course. Like, it's there's so much goodness in Cherry Orchard and great community spirit, and like, I've worked with the most amazing people there, but there's huge social problems, huge lack of services, a lot of people living in that area, and you know, there is a lack of access to basic services and resources. So as a result of that, you will have social problems around drugs, violence, and that can, you know, it's kind of a case of the small few giving a place a reputation that it doesn't deserve, and that's sometimes what happens. But there are a lot of struggles there, and I think there's a lot of goodness though as well. So I mean, my experience in those areas has been hugely positive. But we've had some very sad times, and maybe with violent deaths, with suicide, especially in recent years, those rates rising, and huge concerns.
We were chatting earlier, and it was interesting, because a friend of mine was saying, you know, being a priest, which is similar to where you are, in a sense, it's doing the same thing, in a sense, without the collar maybe, but that it can, people think it's, and it is, can be very isolated and lonely, but at the same time, you're connected to people in a really central time in their lives, you know, if there's a death or a birth or a wedding or formation of faith or whatever. And you were telling a story about Jerry once at a funeral, a tough funeral in the area. Do you want to maybe recall that? What, just explain the background as to how you're not isolated or you're central in some ways.
I suppose we happened to be chatting about Jerry's work, and I think just as an example of how priests, like their role in an area is, you know, sometimes classified as irrelevant and belonging to the past, but my experience of working with priests, including the Redemptorists, and other members of parish teams, are that their roles are still hugely significant. And, you know, when tragedy strikes, people invite you and into that situation to journey with them. And, you know, you have to find, I suppose, a priest, especially at a difficult funeral, for example, has to find the words and offer hope in sometimes really awful situations, and to try and gather a community together. You know, your family's looking for answers, friends who are distraught. You know, that's just one example in that situation of how that, you know, the importance of that role. And like, we often say that we find people so focused at a funeral because they, you know, there's a silence and an attention span of people who you don't get that at any other event normally. And I think that's an example of people, I suppose, searching for meaning in something that's happened, or trying to make sense of it. And you need to have people there, priests and lay ministers, who are able to offer consolation, offer hope, and just help communities get through that time.
I think you said there were about 24 similar pastoral workers around the Diocese of Dublin.
Yeah.
And you said there that kind of a lot of the work is doing is maybe looking, doing leadership work in terms of getting other people to take leadership roles. Where do you see it going? Like, I mean, I see kind of, you know, most average age of the Dublin diocesan priest must be 70s or 60s, you know, late. and in 10 years' time, there's no vocations coming in. So where'll it go next? What do you think will happen next?
I've no idea. I suppose the age demographic is clear to see in terms of clergy at the moment. But I also see, like, you know, we are, the pastoral workers, for example, are of varied ages, and like, there is definitely a role for lay people in ministry. There will have to be in the future. But as well, we're trying to liaise and journey with people in parishes who are hugely committed to their parish. I mean, they give up extraordinary amounts of time voluntarily. And like, what we would say to parish councils and to parishioners is, you know, this is your parish, and in the future, if these parishes do not have priests, then it's up to these people to keep that show on the road. And so yeah, a huge amount of the work is like, we would have run leadership courses and just try to encourage people in whatever way we can, like, with their faith journey, but also with empowering people, basically.
And speaking of that, I suppose the World Meeting of Families in Dublin in the end of August is a kind of sense, a chance to have a dialogue, or have a kind of a, an opportunity for the church not to be the centre of controversies, for which it has been, or the centre of conflict, maybe, in terms of it would maybe seem to be on a whole range of different issues with other sections of society. Can you just give an outline? What's happening? Where, what events are taking place? What's the idea? What's the purpose? What are people, not just in the common home, the greening of it, but in the wider sense? How often does this happen? Why has it come here?
I suppose it's an event that happens every 3 to 4 years, and it's, there are many large international Catholic events, like World Youth Day would be one. The World Meeting of Families is another, and Pope Francis chose Ireland for this.
Did he actually choose
it? Yes, apparently so. And so that's, you know, an amazing fact in itself. And it's a gathering to celebrate family and to celebrate all types of families, but to celebrate the church as a large global family as well. So there's 5 days of the festival, and 3 of those days are in the RDS. They are what's called the pastoral program. So basically, I suppose that's kind of the festival aspect of the 5 days, where pilgrims will come to the RDS, and there's a huge program there for them to choose, keynote speeches, talks, events that they can attend on a huge range of issues related to family life. So, you know, just off the top of my head, I mean, the program's on the website, but off the top of my head, there's talks on, you know, family in the digital age, family and dealing with addiction, domestic abuse. So issues that are affecting family life today, and how church can support, what the church has to say about that. So another element, which I suppose I'm working on more closely, is looking at the environment and care for our common home, care for the earth, and promoting Pope Francis's document Laudato Si on care for our world. So an element of that are our talks on how family life can impact the environment and what we can do to improve our lifestyles, make them more sustainable. But also we are inviting people into reflective spaces. So there are different prayer spaces throughout the festival, and one of them is the Eco Prayer Space, which hosts the Climate Justice Candle, and just inviting people to pray with and for creation, but also workshops for children. There's a huge teen program in the festival. And there's, you know, the legacy piece of inviting people to think more about their relationship with the earth and what they can do after the World Meeting of Families to engage with that.
It's an interesting opportunity, because you've got people coming from over the world, as you say, and and there's different sort of talks and different any highlights that people might think, you know, maybe people typically wouldn't think of going along, but maybe they're interested in this whole issue about ecological and social mm-hmm. justice coming together. And is there any particular events that, and how would they go? How would you, can you just rock up to the RDS or can you book in?
You do need to book, because the RDS is almost fully subscribed at the moment. And so you can, I think at, right now you'll have to check on the website. Yeah. But
what's the website address?
So it's worldmeeting2018.ie. Mm. And the full program list is there, as well as a section on ticketing. So just, I mean, I'm thinking of the Trocar panel on the Thursday evening, which Cardinal Beau from Myanmar is speaking on. And that is all focusing on care for our common home. Eamon Meehan, Dr. Lorna Gold, I think John Sweeney would be taking part in that as well. So, you know, anyone interested in environmental issues, certainly that is one to look out for. And yeah, the ticketing section on the website will explain how to get in to those events. But yeah, you do need tickets.
Mm. There's another cardinal you mentioned earlier.
Tagle.
Yeah. What's he talking about?
He is an exciting individual. He's president of Caritas International, which is basically the international organization which Trocar is part of, and CAFOD and organizations like that. So he is the cardinal from the Philippines, and his talk is about Pope Francis on throwaway culture. So again, taking elements from Laudato Si and looking at how we are living, how sustainable we are, talking about this throwaway culture, and I suppose the mentality behind that, and how we might think about living a bit more simply, and just reflections from Catholic teaching. And I presume he's from the Philippines, so I imagine he will have some thoughts on the effect that, for example, climate change is having in his country and other things like that. So he's another very interesting person to watch out for.
Very good. And there's another event, as I understand it, is it in Christchurch? Or
yes.
What's that?
So on the Friday night, which I think
what is
the 24th of August, yeah. In Christchurch Cathedral, there is an event which is promoting the Great Green Wall. So if you haven't heard of the Great Green Wall, look it up, greatgreenwall.org. This is just an amazing story of hope from the African continent, which involves 11 African countries. And there is basically a great green wall of trees being planted from the east to west coast Africa in an effort to combat desertification. So there are various groups involved in this, including the UNCCD. And this event on the Friday night is going to be a multi-faith event. So hopefully including the Muslim community and the Christian community in promoting the Great Green Wall. And we're going to be inviting all our eco-volunteers and everyone involved in this project to that event. We're hoping to bring the climate justice candle from the RDS to Christchurch Cathedral. And it's the eve of Pope Francis's arrival to Ireland, so it'll be a little bit of a vigil around, you know, I suppose, in anticipation.
Happens if you're not religious? Can you go along?
Of course you can. I think even if, you know, wherever you are on that spectrum, because, you know, people are in different spaces with their own faith and spirituality, I think there's something for everyone at this event. In terms of it being an international festival that's kind of going out to a global audience, and it's covering such a huge range of topics that I think it's worth getting involved and trying to attend what you can. Mm-hmm. So I mean, even like the Phoenix Park on the Sunday, where we're expecting up to 600,000 people for the Mass with Pope Francis, this is a, you know, it's a once in a lifetime gig in Ireland, really.
And it's, I was at the last one.
Were you? Yeah. I was 3 weeks old, so I wasn't there.
We got up at 4 in the morning, I think, and ended up still about 3 miles away. But it was. I always remember. I remember the jumbo jet flying over and just the sea of yellow and white flags flapping. Yeah. And it was funny. It was a big event. One of the things I'd be keen to see this time in thinking about it is, okay, whatever the number is, 500,000, doesn't mm-hmm. matter, whatever. But when they leave, would it be possible to do this where people leave no trace behind?
Yeah,
where we'd leave the field, like the deer could walk out the next day and chomp on the grass. Yeah. How might we get that message across?
Well, this is a hugely important message. Pilgrims will be sent a video about how to green your pilgrimage. But even getting that message out there even wider via social media or whatever it is. And for all festivals and for all pilgrimages and for all trips that we take, that to leave no trace. And I suppose really inviting people to think about what they pack in their backpack, what they bring with them, how they get there, and taking away everything that they bring with them again, you know. So
again, that could be you got a book for the Phoenix Park, but it doesn't cost anything.
Yeah, it's free, but you do need a ticket, so okay. You register online.
That we didn't do in 1979.
No,
we did get a special. Remember, there was a special bus ticket which had a yellow strip on it. And I think we got special milk bottles at the time.
Wow.
Papal milk bottles, I vaguely remember. And maybe that was the millennium. I'm confusing it a bit, but this time you don't have to pay, but you do have to book online. And I think, as you say, part of what that whole message is about is around that we do respect nature, we connect to our common home and look after our common home, and we do it in practice on that. And take that as an example. Because it always sickens people. You see festivals and it's all very much overall in sustainability, and everyone walks away and there's a mountain of trash left behind. If we could do it where there was an event in the Phoenix Park where there wasn't an ice cream lolly stick left behind, it would be a really nice message.
Absolutely. And like, that's what has to happen. You do have images from festivals in Ireland where, I mean, people leave everything behind, including their tents and their sleeping bags and stuff. And I know this isn't an overnight event, which helps, but that links back to this throwaway mentality, you know, and how we can encourage people to reuse, to donate to charity, to whatever they do, but just to simply throw away and leave it there, it's just,
if I can't, it can't speak happen. Last question.
Yeah.
I mean, we were chatting earlier, you were telling me some of the background. You worked in India with the Salesians, was it?
Yeah.
And it was with boys who had been involved in slave labour?
I suppose there were children who are at risk of becoming child labourers, and some of them had been. They would have come from very poor backgrounds, therefore they mightn't have been in school. They would have been out working from a very young age, maybe in the agricultural sector or in with factories or companies or whatever it might have been. So, I was very lucky to spend some time just living with those boys and
the reason I was making the connection, and it's not slave labour, it's child labour, which is different, obviously.
Yeah.
But what were they making in child labour? What were they doing?
Well, a lot of, I mean, I suppose we have this notion of children in factories making specific items, but like child labour in that context can be, a lot of it is agricultural work.
Yeah.
So they could be out on farms, but doing like heavy labour from age 6 or 7. So it's not just like, oh, they have a part-time job. It's a lot more serious than that. They're not in education. They're, and I think in the parts of India where I worked, an industry where they do end up a lot of the time is in making bricks for the construction industry.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and that's hard work, and it's work that children should certainly not be doing.
Because I was making the connection in terms of we consume here without thinking where it's coming from.
Yeah.
And there's a whole range of different ways, ecologically, what's happening, but also social justice-wise.
Absolutely. And like there are certain, you know, I suppose companies who've had a bad track record, especially in India on this one. So like children have been working in factories, you know, so like, but it's back to the question that I asked myself about, you know, what do I buy Where do I buy it? And just try and make ourselves more aware of that, of who's at the other end of the production line. Mm. And
we are in a common home.
Yeah, exactly.
Jean, thank you very much for answering my questions and telling me something about the World Meeting of Families and the greening of it, which hopefully is going to be a huge success. I'm sure it will be. And we look forward to seeing you there on the day.
Yeah, thanks, God. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to this edition of Open Field. Please let me know what you think by emailing me at eamon.ryan@aractus.ie, or you can find me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram and LinkedIn. This podcast was produced by Benedict Schlepper-Conley and Anna Conlon. The theme music is by Benedict Schlepper-Conley. You can always find the latest edition of Open Field on my website, eamonryan.ie, or on all main podcasting platforms. Bye for now.